I think I speak for everyone here.
Yeah.
When I say thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah.
For everything you've done.
Hey, welcome to the Double Drop Kick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And today we want to talk about a controversial subject in wrestling, something that's changed very much over the years, and that is blood in wrestling. But before we get to that, we want to send you to this week's gimmick tape. Mark, tell him what's on the gimmick table today.
The Memphis Heat DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I'll just tell you right now, get it.
Yes.
If you want to hear it, because we talk about Memphis a lot, the stuff that went on, it's a great. It talks about, it starts you kind of out with Sputnik Monroe, who was a heel,
yeah,
but really broke down racial barriers, yes, in Memphis. At the time, he would go down to Beale Street and hang out in the black clubs and, yeah, get arrested for it.
Yeah.
And then when they would come to the arena, when the blacks would come to the arena, he made them let them in.
Yeah.
And not, see, they had their own special seating section.
Yeah.
They called it the Crow's Nest.
Yeah.
And that's where all the black customers would sit at.
Yeah.
And he said, no, those are my people. You let them into the arena,
yeah,
with everybody else, or I don't wrestle tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this guy, he was the heel.
I remember one of the things he said on the DVD was there was a guy came in and had you know, was a racist. And Sputnik Monroe, I think it was him that said, "Well, just pay him out of off the white ticket."
That's right. Just pay him out of the white money.
Yeah,
yeah. That's right.
I cannot say there was only one thing that disappointed me about this documentary, this DVD. It was too short. Now it's over an hour and a half.
Well, yeah, but it's also got several hours of bonus features.
But what I mean is, this was so good. I hated to see it end.
Right, you wanted more.
Because,
yeah,
we did not...
It should have been 5 hours like that,
yes,
Montreal documentary.
Because you and I did not grow up on Memphis wrestling.
No.
And I'm telling you, it's one of the heartbreaks of my life.
As you get to go back
and
watch
it.
But here's the good thing,
like,
about that.
Miss?
WWE doesn't own Memphis television rights.
Right.
So when they're discussing this stuff...
Yeah.
You get to see them talk. They talk about the empty arena match.
Yeah.
They talk about a lot of things that took on that happened there, and you get to see it. So,
yeah,
it's not just guys. And it's not guys that don't know any. It's like Jerry Lawler and Jackie Fargo, Sputnik Monroe, Jerry Jarrett. Those are the guys who were interviewed for this. It's a big project that they did.
Bill Dundee's on there.
Bill Dundee's on there. And can I just say, I think he's had a little plastic surgery.
You think?
I don't know, but I don't remember him looking like that when he was Sir William or whatever WCW.
You mentioned the empty arena match, and there's some clips from that, and I forgot the end of it. Jerry, give me some help.
Somebody,
hey,
give me some help. the Tupelo, Mississippi concession stand brawl.
So
they talk
good.
About it. They detail the Nick Gulas. When Jerry Jarrett thought he bought into the promotion, but,
yeah,
come to find out he just bought in to have an option to buy into the promotion,
yeah,
and how they said, all right, well, we're going to go to another channel then. And he and Lance Russell, who had been the program director,
yeah,
at that channel, left,
yeah,
that whatever channel they were on and went to another channel,
yeah,
and took Lawler and Jerry Jarrett, and they started their own rival promotion against Nick Gulas's promotion.
Yeah.
And that's a good story. There's a great story that's an extra. Have you watched it yet?
I have
about
not
the guy,
that
and his name
yet.
Was Mario. I wish I had written it down because I'd never heard of him before. But,
mm-hmm,
apparently in that era he was kind of a shooter, and he showed up and did a shoot run in on one of Jerry Jarrett and Jerry during one of their matches, and they beat him up.
Yeah,
and then he came back and he did another shoot run in with a straight razor and was going to slice him up in the ring. This is not part of the show.
Yeah.
He just runs out and chase Lawler back to the dressing room, swatting at him with a straight razor. And when he got back to the dressing room, they pulled a gun on him and run him off.
Uh-huh.
That's a great story.
Wow.
It's a great, and they didn't include it in the thing because it's really long. And they also have a lot of the studio footage that,
yeah,
they recorded as far as extras. I can't say enough good things about the Memphis Heat DVD.
It gets
a 4 out of 4 chair shots to the Heat.
And I've seen it as well. I absolutely, if you love old school wrestling.
When good guys were good guys and bad guys were bad guys.
Right, and let me tell you, you will see, if you've just grown up watching Monday Night Raw, and that's all you know of Jerry Lawler, you got to watch this. Because
they talk about
that. That is awesome.
The Andy Kaufman stuff.
Yes.
The great songs, like the song that the handsome Jimmy, not great songs, but you know,
songs.
The songs that Jimmy Hart wrote about.
Jimmy Hart. Jimmy, dude, that guy's awesome too.
Yeah. The songs he wrote about Jimmy Valiant, the songs he wrote about Jerry Lawler. I think those, I don't know if they're in their entirety.
They did like the Rock and Roll Express. No, just clips of them.
Yeah, but a lot of that stuff's on there. That's great, man. I would go, I will be watching it again as soon as I get it back.
One of the clips they show is when Jimmy Hart first came in, and they're going to record this song for Jerry Lawler. And at that time, Jerry Lawler's the heel. Lance Russell goes to his house. He's like, Lance Russell, why don't you stick around and you can watch us record a number one record? And Lance Russell's like, man, I really don't want to. Oh, whatever. He's like, you go sit in the corner.
I could care less about your number one record.
But like, he doesn't just, sure. Lance Russell's playing he played a great face announcer. He was just
innocent bystander.
Yeah, just did. Anyway, listen. Get this DVD. Yes. It is incredible.
I think you can get it at highspots.com by going double drop kick, clicking on that banner.
There will be a banner for that DVD right there to get it somewhere. You click on it. It's well worth the money. One thing I'll say about Memphis is I'm not sure how to word this, but The ring they use is funky looking. It's different than what we have today because the turnbuckles were non-existent. Like, there's no, it's just like they put a little extra tape in the corner. There's no like padded pillow there in the corner. And also, there was no apron. Yeah. You could always see under their ring.
So you're telling me there was nowhere to hide kendo sticks?
Nowhere to hide kendo sticks or cinder blocks.
Well, I don't know how you expect to run a successful company if you can't hide a kendo stick under the ring.
I mean, all right, Mark, like I said, Memphis, the Memphis territory was famous for the blood that they had in matches.
Yes, sir.
So we want to just spend some time talking about some differences between blood in the old days, blood today, talk about some matches. We're just kind of going to free flow.
Right.
Some good stuff.
Like
we always do, calling it in the ring. Mark, when I was growing up, there was almost blood in every match.
You smoked, didn't you? when you were growing up.
A couple of times.
Yeah, that's right.
We won't say at whose house. Don't want him to get in trouble, Tracy. So, I hope he listens to this. But when we grew up, there was almost blood in every match. If Dusty Rhodes came to the ring, he was going to bleed.
And he might bleed before he got in the ring if he wouldn't care.
Right.
And I have seen some of those guys, him and Flair, you'll see them bleeding before they got in the ring occasionally.
Really?
You know, they'd have a Band-Aid on their head. And
from
it already,
the night before.
Right, and it would already be soaked with blood, so you knew. As soon as that Band-Aid comes off, man, it's somebody's wearing the proverbial crimson mask.
But let me ask you this. To me, that almost desensitized me to it because you knew if there's a cage match, there's going to be blood. It was like there was no question, especially in the Mid-Atlantic area.
Yeah.
WWF.
Well, they had that cruddy big blue ring.
Yeah.
Nobody wasn't going to bust nobody open.
Right. I just remember now, pre-big blue cage.
Yeah, they had a real. I watched. I just watched the other night. Stan Hansen and Bruno Sammartino. Oh. Their return match after. I think it was a return match. I don't know where they fought in a cage after Hansen broke Bruno's neck. And they had their big blow off match in a cage.
And there was blood.
Yeah, but it wasn't a.
Right.
You know, I mean, it wasn't the Muta Hoss
right
kind of blood, but I mean, there was blood.
I just remember WrestleMania 2, Hogan and Bundy in the cage, and Bundy busted open, not a whole lot. And I just remember, whoa, what are we seeing here?
Whoa.
I mean, when Hulk Hogan bled back in the 80s, that was a big deal.
And Hogan usually bled a lot. Like, he was one of those guys that when he would gig himself, it seemed just like it would cover him down to his chest.
So let's go. Let's fast forward.
Maybe that's because he didn't have hair soaking it up.
Oh, goodness gracious. He should have shaved his head about 15 years ago.
Yeah, because that do-rag's coming off at some point.
It is. You know,
and that skullet is going to be on full display.
I mean.
But that's almost part of his gimmick, though. Is the
is
ball.
That a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, who's the Babe Ruth of wrestling?
Well, there you go.
I got a full head of hair, and I'd trade places with Hulk Hogan today.
All right, so let's fast forward to the end, toward the end of WCW. I want to talk about Hulk Hogan, and I want to talk about blading, which is...
Juicing.
Juicing. Sorry, I'm using the wrong term.
No. For me, I'm just in the southern region.
Right.
Everywhere I worked, I never heard anybody call it blading. It was always juicing or getting color.
Getting color.
I just never heard it. And I know that in other parts of the country they do say that, but not around here.
And that's when you go in and you've, by hook or by crook, you cut yourself to cause the bleeding. And then the other way is called what? When you legitimately.
Oh, the hard way.
You get busted open the hard way.
Yeah.
Back to Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, it's toward the end of WCW, and it was almost like he had something to prove. I remember he lost to Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Awesome makes his debut. I think it was his debut. He comes in with a chair. Hogan's got his back to Mike Awesome. And Hogan, when he's turning around to get hit with the chair, you see him very clearly, you know, kind of bring his thumb up to his forehead, rake across. Then he turns around and gets hit. But I say that because toward the end of WCW, Hulk Hogan started juicing every week. He started, it was like he had something to prove. He's like, he wanted to be one of the boys. I don't know if that was a Russo thing, because Russo, I don't want to talk about him this episode. I don't know. Do you know of that in wrestling, of a guy who's just trying to
stay relevant.
Stay relevant, yeah.
Bob Hogan at the end of WCW. Yeah. A little bit, probably with Ric Flair some.
Right.
Toward the end of his WWE run, I think. Right. Some of that, too. I can remember he did the big thing. I think it was Chris Jericho that attacked him. And it was on Monday Night Raw. And, I mean, he bled heavily.
Right.
And I may be wrong about who it was. Do you remember that? He attacked him at ringside. And
I just remember when his TNA stuff, a lot of blood. And,
yeah.
You know, nothing needs to be said about that.
You know, when the quality of your matches go down, look at Abdul the Butcher. I mean, his quality of his matches as he got older and more immobile in the ring were not great, so he had to rely a little bit more on blood, which leads to kind of why you don't see a whole lot of blood anymore. Was his matches with Devin Nichols, where Devin Nichols gets hepatitis. He blames it on Abby. What happened? I don't know.
Right. We weren't there.
I wasn't there, and I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate that one way or the other, but I think it's unfair to tell a man, this is just my opinion, that it's okay for you to cut me. And then when he cuts you, you get upset about it.
Yes.
Which would lead me to the new Jack mass transit incident.
Yeah,
same situation where you have the kid shows up, 17 years old, lies and says he's not 17. He's got never been trained.
Lies about that.
Yeah. And then tells New Jack, I want to get color and I don't know how to do it. Will you do it for me? New Jack says, yeah, I'll do it for you. And he gashed his head open and he almost killed him.
Yeah.
And they tried to prosecute New Jack for this.
Yeah.
And his defense was his wrestling.
Yeah.
Wrestling ain't real. And he got off.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of it.
And I think he was right. I don't think that he was wrong. Did he go too far?
Right.
Was it a little excessive? Yes. But the you don't put your body in somebody else's hands like that.
Because the kid says, "Hey, I've never." They're basically the kid's like, "Hey, yeah, I'm old enough. I've been trained." They're like, "Dude, if you're in this match, you're getting color."
Yeah.
Well, I've never done that. Can you do it for me?
Yeah.
Let's stop right there. This is a young man, and I'm sure New Jack's one of his heroes. He's living in the Northeast. He's getting.
Oh yeah. He's at ECW.
Would you agree or disagree? New Jack's legitimately crazy.
No, I disagree. I think New Jack's legitimately intelligent. I think he's got a lot of brain damage now from the Danbury fall.
Right.
But no, I don't think he's crazy. I think he is excessive sometimes.
No. I'm talking about...
I think he's worked people into believing that he's crazy.
He's kind of built up this...
Built a gimmick.
When I'm watching the Forever Hardcore documentary,
mm-hmm.
which you can... it's either on YouTube or Vimeo online that you can watch.
I've got it on DVD.
To me... New Jack sells it. He is crazy.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. And I'm like, you talk about healing it up.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
You know
how they originally started? When they came into Smoky Mountain, they beat everybody with a two count.
Oh, yeah.
Because of affirmative action. That was their original gimmick was we only have to get a two count.
It got
can you imagine in the Tennessee where that got monster heat?
Yeah.
And they got a lot of criticism for doing that gimmick, but it was great. Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
That's pretty good.
I mean, it generated a lot of heat and it put them on the map.
Right.
You know, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, is it a little bit questionable? Yeah, maybe so, but it was entertaining.
Yeah. So back to Mass Transit. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's on the Forever Hardcore documentary. That's something you probably don't want to watch at work or around your kids.
No, but it's good.
Very informative about that era in wrestling and ECW. And they show the clip from Mass Transit, and it's clear. New Jack gets ready to cut that kid. And it's not just he doesn't nick him.
No.
It's like it looks like he gets either – it's like a pizza cutter or a butcher knife. Not a butcher knife.
It's a scalpel. It's a surgical scalpel. Yeah.
It is a knife.
Yeah, it is a knife. Yeah, he uses the scalpel.
And goes all the way across his forehead.
Temple to temple,
I think. Kid kind of screams, and then when he sees how much he's bleeding, he screams like a little girl.
Yeah.
And then you hear
– And his daddy's in the front.
He's only 17.
Well, y'all probably shouldn't have lied about that before he got in the match. I have zero sympathy for him.
Lesson learned.
None. Well, he's dead now.
Oh,
but I have no sympathy for him at all.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I'm just telling you,
he made a bad choice.
Well, he had the bariatric surgery done
and
died from complications of that. Young guy died real young.
Yeah.
But still, that ain't got nothing to do with nothing as far as I'm concerned. We're talking about that match, and I don't think there was it excessive? Yes. But was it wrong? No, because the guy asked him to do it.
You talked about... You talk about hepatitis, and since the 80s, the only disease anybody really talked about was HIV. As far as blood, now we've learned so much about science and health and things like that, and to the point where WWF has fined guys for blading.
Uh-huh.
To my knowledge, they don't. That's off the table. Like, unless you get a written permission.
Yeah, I think so.
Batista was wrestling somebody overseas, I think, and actually juiced, and they caught it on the overhead camera.
Mm.
And he got fined, I can't remember the amount.
Yeah.
But I think Batista was trying to pull a Hogan and try to, just stay relevant. And I think that's a good thing. I think... These guys are already doing something that's unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think you should, personally, I think there's a place for blood.
Yes.
And because you could do it safely.
Yes.
At the right time.
Right.
When it matters.
Yes.
At a Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah.
You need a little bit of blood. That's my opinion. And you can very safely make sure both guys are clean.
Yes, yes.
And, I mean, I wouldn't have an issue with doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's... When you do it, it's the last match of the night. You don't have to worry about anybody.
Exactly.
And you have procedures in place like, okay, these guys are going to bleed in this match. We're going to auction off this ring apron for charity.
Right, right.
Because, you talk about those old... I mean, good. What kind of germs were growing on those old ring mats?
It's awful. I'm telling you, if you've never been on one, it's... It's disgusting,
man.
They stink. Yes. I mean, because they get sweat and blood. I mean,
and other bodily fluids.
I mean, are all over it. Not to mention the stuff that you dredged into the ring on the bottom of your shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
People throwing drinks and sodas and food.
Really?
People
would throw stuff.
I've told this story.
If he's
listening, Timmy King, my partner Tank Murdoch, and I were at the Westminster Rec Center, and they sell the nachos there, you know. And we're doing the match, and we brawled out onto the floor, and I hear Tank go, "Oh, man!" You know, and I turn around and looked, and on the side of his face is nacho cheese with a bunch of nachos stuck to it, dripping down the side of his face. Somebody had got so mad at him that they threw their nachos at him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's great heat.
Yeah.
I had a guy threaten to stab me.
Oh, good.
In the locker, in the parking lot after the thing one time. The greatest thing in the world to me. I said, I made this guy hate me so much that he wants to kill me.
I don't want you to tell us that would be double drop kick after dark. But you shut him down. Is that the guy you... There was one guy you told me threatened you, and you shut him down pretty quick.
Oh, I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember what I said. I might have been lying. No. But I'm not sure.
You made it clear to him that... attempting to do such a thing would be a bad idea on his part.
Oh, I told the guy that told me he was going to stab me that I'd be in the parking lot. I told him when I was leaving the dressing room,
right.
I'm going to leave here about 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock or whatever it was, and I'll be out there, and I got a knife, too, if you want to fight. Come on out there, and we'll fight, and I'll kick the out of you and your buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't. You have to.
You're right.
You can't.
And they weren't out there waiting.
You can't know, and they weren't out there waiting.
Yeah.
You can't sell that you're legitimately worried somebody might actually stab you, even though I was. And I said to Tank, we need to walk out together tonight because I don't know if there's going to be trouble.
You talk about the ring mats, and as I went back and watched the clips of this match, No Way Out 2004, JBL and Eddie Guerrero. In my opinion, that's the worst, a ring mat. It's like they just got... a pint of blood and just squirted it on this is what's strange to me, okay? Pull the curtain back a little bit. Some of you know, if you're my Facebook friend, my daughters were in a jet ski accident, so we spent much of Labor Day week in the hospital. And my daughter had to have a blood transfusion. So a lot of this, I've been thinking about blood. But I'm telling you, I'm squeamish. Like, just, they brought in the blood. It's in a pouch. I'm about to pass out there, you know. But when it comes to wrestling, I'm not affected by
it. It can't get bloody enough.
I can live with or without it. But it doesn't, it's so weird because, like, and my wife says, well, you can watch that. But me and my mom had a deal when I was growing up because I would hang up wrestling pictures all over my wall. And the deal was, and she didn't make me. It was just kind of like out of respect. I tried not to hang up any with blood on it, except there was one time where it was like a 2-page deal, and I wanted half the page up there. And I didn't want to cut it, didn't want to tear it. And so half of it was like Bruiser Brody and somebody from Parade of Champions and then like the Road Warriors or somebody. But that was the only time. And that was a barbed wire match, which... not a lot of barbed wire matches today.
No.
You know why? Because if you have a barbed wire match, there needs to be blood.
Yeah, right. You can't do a barbed wire match and somebody not bleed.
And that's...
Which I don't know. Has WWE ever had a barbed wire match? I don't think so. That's just not their their deal.
No.
I don't know.
I personally don't like any. Okay, I grew up on a farm.
Uh-huh.
I've been around barbed wire.
Uh-huh.
It makes me, well, to see it in the context of wrestling makes me uncomfortable, whether it's, you know, the rip-off abyss, having, you know, a bat wrapped in barbed wire, whether it's a plywood wrapped in barbed wire with C4. I don't know. Now, except for this one time, we talked about this before, the barbed wire cage match that was on UWF.
Right.
That was good. That was a pretty good
match. I don't think seen that match.
I don't know that. I tried to find it on the.
Yeah, I can't find it, man.
I'm going to find it just for you today.
I want to see it.
Today.
I want to see it.
Let me ask you this. To me, you can't. What am I trying to say? To have a barbed wire match or a cage match or any other match like that, where there is not the possibility of blood, you know, there, unless there's an accident. And to me, that removes some of the reality of it. You know what I mean? It moved, like if I see two guys going into a Hell in a Cell match, I don't believe that they're really doing what they are trying to make me think they're doing, because I don't see any blood. If you run a guy's head into a mesh steel link, whatever that's called, chain link fence, and you rake his head across there, if you did that to me over in my yard, my dog pen, I'm going to get cut up.
Well, you know, on Raw last night, I assume this is going to air next Monday.
Yes.
They used the cage twice. Uh-huh. And I think Randy Orton, after they kind of used it in their match, he was bleeding.
Oh.
Because, I mean, there's no way you're going to rub your skin, like you said. There's just no way to do that kind of thing and somebody not bleed a little bit.
Right.
Which Orton, man, he must have thin skin. He bleeds
in
a lot.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, he bleeds a lot.
What can you think of any times, Mark, because we talk about guys are juicing, they're doing it purposefully, where it went wrong? Where a guy's going to juice himself and just screws it up.
Well, there's the famous example of Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah.
Was it Super Clash 3?
Yes.
With Jerry Lawler, where he tied the Bliazade around his finger and was doing something, then it was hanging out, and he caught himself and lacerated it entirely under his arm.
And if you can see me, I'm kind of getting
lightheaded. He sliced his tricep open, it was. And I'm talking about deep. He didn't just kind of hit himself a little bit.
He didn't cut himself shaving.
Right, yeah. He sliced his arm open, and they had to work it into the beginning of the match, the opening sequence of the match, just to, you know.
Did that play a part in the end of the match as well?
Yeah, they stopped the match for blood, if I'm not mistaken. It was either, sometimes I get confused, it was either that match or it was the match with Kurt Hennig that Jerry Lawler had. But I'm thinking it was the one with Kerry Von Erich. They may have stopped it. I don't.
Yeah, I know they stopped one match with Von Erich, but I don't know if it was. I think it was that one.
I think it was, but I don't know.
Okay, well, I mean that's.
New you ask me something I don't know. That's a good one.
Any other, like when we talk about accidental, I mean where there's supposed to be blood, but maybe not as much as we saw.
Let's see.
I know you've talked about it before. Shawn Michaels, the very first Hell in a Cell, where he kind of cuts across his nose.
Yeah, he hit himself across the nose. Yeah, there's been a lot of instances of guys cutting themselves too deep.
Right.
Ted DiBiase, and when Dick Murdoch posted him, he cut himself too deep, and blood was squirting out of his head.
Brett Wayne Sawyer in Portland. If you can go on YouTube and watch that, oh my goodness.
I have to check
that
out.
They do the Spirit of 76, you know, where they wrap around his head. And it's hard to, I mean, that kind of stuff's hard to watch. I want to get this straight, though, Mark, for our fans. What you're telling me is that if you go into a ring with some sort of blade on your body, something could go wrong.
There is a chance when you start using razor blades that, that somebody might get cut a little too deep or a little too wide.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, sometimes it's not the blade that causes a lot of damage.
No. Sometimes you'll have, and I don't know where you're going with this, but I think Undertaker and Brock Lesnar had that famous Hell in a Cell match where Lesnar hit Undertaker with the steps, and something on the steps caught Undertaker in the head.
Yeah.
And it looked like it poked a hole in his head.
Oh.
I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if he juiced himself and he just did that good a job.
Right.
But something hit him in the head off those steps, and he bled. It was down his face and down his chest. Have you seen the match?
No.
Oh, it's gruesome.
Is it on a pay-per-view?
Yeah, it was one of the Hell in a Cell.
I bet I can go watch it for $9.99.
You can do it. You can do it.
Let me... now, Undertaker, he didn't bleed a whole lot.
No,
right?
Not often.
See, that's why I would think in that instance that it was the hard way.
I think it was, yeah. I've always heard that it was not planned to be that way, that it was... that something cut him, something on the steps cut him.
Yeah.
And that would be a hard way.
One thing that has changed, I think, yeah, it was Money in the Bank this year. Orton got cut open the hard way. And I think we talked about that on another episode. But the doctors come down to the ring to try to get the bleeding. And that just...
That's, I hate that.
Some of the guys, you wish you... But again, that is part of the culture we live in now of basketball. I mean, back in the day, you'd see guys finish a basketball game, if they had on a white jersey, the whole top part of it would just be blood. Now, if you bleed, if they've got like a certain amount of time to get the bleeding to stop, or you have to be substituted, if you get blood on any part of your outfit,
your costume,
your uniform,
get blood on your basketball costume,
it has to be replaced. So even if you're not the one bleeding, if there's blood on your uniform, it has to be replaced. And things have changed since we've been.
Or have they changed for the better? Or are we raising a nation of men who ain't going to be men anymore?
Well, I think they're just. I think we're just trying to be cautious, and I think...
No, we're trying to make masculinity a crime.
I do agree. I do agree with that. But I think that... I don't know. I'm kind of...
You're supposed to feel bad about being a real man now.
Yeah, that is true.
You are. That's what they don't... They don't want men who will stand up and fight anymore.
Right. Right, fight for the right. You're
supposed to be good, well-behaved little boys.
Right, and just kind of let people walk all over you.
Yeah,
and
that's what they want.
Ridiculous. I don't, you know, we talked about war games before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the quote from you is, war games is not how you start a feud, it's how you finish a feud.
Yes, sir.
I would say to you, Mark, I don't want to bring war games back. Because a war games without blood... is a farce.
Yeah, a watered down war games is not something I want to see.
No. And I'm not saying everybody's got to go all Dusty Rhodes in there, but I'm just saying, if, you know, I'm sure on the network there are war games in the last
decade. Yeah, they actually did a whole DVD of all of them.
But are there some without blood?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I don't know. I don't know that there were. Maybe there were some, like, with the Shockmaster stuff, where they were kind of going family friendly.
Listen, the Shockmaster's not family friendly. I'm just going to tell you.
True.
Anything that takes points off your IQ score is not family friendly. That's all I'm going to say about that. Are there any times that you can think back to where maybe you had, I'm thinking in particular, baby faces? Or it could have been anybody, where they didn't bleed normally and getting color got them over. Can you
think? It's an interesting one. I wasn't expecting that question. Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13.
That's one I'm thinking of.
Because it was a heel at the time, and it made him a babyface.
Yeah, yeah.
Just that's how you use blood.
Yeah.
if you use blood that way,
right,
sparingly, yeah, occasionally, it can really be effective. If it's like, if it's in the opening match and the second match and the third match, right, and then you're desensitized to it. But I'm telling you, at some point in WWE, I really believe somebody's going to get juice, and it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and what was logical about WrestleMania 13 was they knew the story they were going to try to tell, and he didn't juice until Bret Hart hits him, if I'm not mistaken. That's, you know, that match start to finish. Bret Hart hits him with the ring bell, right?
No.
What?
He hit the ring post out, or hit the guardrail outside.
But he hits him with the ring bell at some point.
Okay, I mean,
but he was bleeding before that.
Yeah, okay. He was bleeding before
but,
that, yeah.
But still, it wasn't, you knew this caused him to bleed.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, what happened?
Right, there wasn't a what happened. He went and he went into the guardrail, and then when he come up, he had started bleeding, and then...
It wasn't like when, on a UWF episode, Steve Williams, Dr. Death Steve Williams, gets thrown out of the ring, goes up under the ring apron for through a commercial break, comes yeah. back out, and it's as if Heinz ketchup has been poured all over his head, and that was pretty terrible.
You know, speaking of that, they did a thing years ago. I think it was One Man Gang at Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And One Man Gang posted Duggan, and there was a bolt sticking out, and the bolt hit Duggan in the head. And I mean, you're talking about bloody. He bleeds. It's a. Oh. It's pretty gruesome, man. Yeah, it's pretty gruesome. Jiminy Cricket.
The other one I was going to mention about, as far as, you know, people who didn't bleed or were expected to bleed, is in the AWA Midnight Rockers, Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels, were doing a program with Playboy Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. And they had one match, I want to say it was on TV, I don't yeah. remember because I didn't watch that, where Jannetty and Michaels get color and just, and they didn't typically do that, and they go totally over the top. And I just remember in that match seeing Shawn Michaels just selling. I mean,
he's selling
like he's about to die.
Yeah.
And that was great to me. And to me, that was just before, if I'm not mistaken, them going big time.
It could have been, yeah, yeah. That's a really good match, man. If you've never seen it, it's worth it. I know you have. I mean, I'm talking to. Sometimes, Heath, I'm talking to the people that might be listening to the show.
I need to see if that's on YouTube, because that'd be a good one. That's a good one.
Well, if it's not, you let me know. I got it on DVD. That's going to turn into a new catchphrase for the show. I got it on DVD.
You got everything on DVD. So we've been talking about blood.
I want to talk a little bit about blood, if that's all right.
Yes.
Can I say something?
Please.
Would it be okay?
Yeah.
Can I finish?
Yeah.
No. If I was to say to you, Heath, do you remember this famous match where one of the wrestlers and the promoter and the referee all conspired to double-cross the champion and take the title off of him without his prior knowledge to that event happening? Would you remember the match that I'm talking about?
I think I would, but I...
Which match do you think I'm talking about?
Montreal?
Well, you're half right.
Uh-huh.
What's the rest?
Survivor Series.
Nice. See, that part you're wrong about.
Really?
Yeah, back in the 30s.
Oh.
That's right. I'm going to take you back. And this ties in with the blood that we're going to talk about. Do you know if I said the Gold Dust Trio of Toots Mott, Billy Sandow, and Ed the Strangler Lewis?
Uh-huh.
Toots Mott is a very important figure in wrestling. He was kind of widely considered to be the first booker in wrestling, because what happened is Lewis, if you don't know, was what they called a hooker.
Right.
Do you know what a hooker is?
Tell our folks.
A hooker, well, it's not. Listen, it's not what you think.
Yeah.
A hooker is the opposite of a shooter in wrestling. A shooter would be a guy, and I want a good example. Brock Lesnar would be a good shooter. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you want to fight, you get a real fight on your hands. A hooker is the type of guy that if somebody's showing out a little bit, you just hook them in a hole and you put an end to the match right then. Right. That happened very famously a few years ago with they were doing the Tough Enough contest.
Yeah.
And Daniel Puter came in and decided to shoot on Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
And Daniel Puter was a pretty tough guy. He had a legitimate mixed martial arts background. And Kurt Angle gave him his body. Mm-hmm. And then he put him in a legitimate submission hold. And Angle, to hear Daniel Puter tell the story, I almost beat Kurt Angle. No, you didn't.
Right.
You double-crossed Kurt Angle.
Right.
He gave you his body and allowed you to put him in a submission hold.
Yeah.
And then you turned it into a real hold. And when he realized what was going on, to his credit, he didn't sell that he was being hurt.
Yeah.
He got out of the hold. He hooked Daniel Puter up and pinned him so he couldn't kick out, and he beat him.
Yeah.
On TV.
Yeah.
This happened.
Yeah. You can
pull it up if you've never seen it, but it's worth watching. But anyway, that's what a hooker is.
Yeah. And real quick on that instance, Kurt Angle no-selling that his arm's about to get broken in half. Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. Well, that's Kurt Angle. He's an Olympic level athlete.
He's a cyborg.
Yeah, he's a cyborg. Well, anyway, Ed Strangler Lewis. Yeah, that's right. Ed Strangler Lewis was the world champion, and these three would travel around. And wrestling was a work before that.
Yeah.
The matches were worked, but it was always, there were a lot of shoots too. Well, Ed Lewis figured out, he's real influential in wrestling history, if you don't know.
Yeah.
That rather than me showing up and having a match with you one time, we can do a series of three matches.
Mm-hmm.
And I can lose. We'll set you up in the first match where it looks like you could have won if it hadn't have been for something.
Right.
And then the second match, you can beat me. And then the third match, I'll get my title back. And he was good enough that during that third match, if you didn't want to give him the title back, he would take the title back.
Right.
He would put you in a hold. And he would make you quit.
Yeah.
He was that good.
Yeah.
So he is often credited with being the guy who led us into the era of professional wrestling being a work.
Mm-hmm.
Toots Mont went on to, after everybody split up, form the Capital Wrestling Federation in Washington, which was are you familiar with that? They had where their home base was from. The Capitol, they were in Washington,
right?
But their office was in New York,
yeah.
And it became the WWWF,
yeah.
So Lewis goes to Montreal in the 30s to wrestle a guy named Henry DeGlane,
mm-hmm.
And Lewis had requested an American referee. They're having a 2 out of 3 falls match, so he requests an American referee, and the Montreal Athletic Commission said no, and they assigned a Canadian referee. So they do the first fall, and DeGlane wins the first fall.
Right.
And as they go into the second fall, he appears and he shows bite marks on his arm where he's bleeding, where Ed Lewis has bit him while they were doing something, and the referee disqualified Lewis.
Right.
So he just won 2 falls.
Yeah.
DeGlane wins the world title from Lewis. They screwed him over and took his title. And that's how they did it. He bit himself. Which leads to the ruling being passed that you hear all the time now, that the title can't change hands on a disqualification. That's why.
Wow.
That match is why the title can't change hands on a disqualification. And it took a long time for Lewis to finally get him back in the ring. It wasn't like they had a return match right away. My understanding is it was almost 2 years before Lewis was able to get him back in the ring. And allegedly what Lewis said to him in the dressing room was, we can do it the easy way or we can do it the hard way, and it's up to you.
Yeah.
And he chose to do it the easy way, and he gave Lewis his title back.
Right.
And that's why we have a no disqual. The title can't change hands on a no DQ because of a blood and a match in Montreal and the original Montreal screw jab back in the 1930s. Cue your impressedness.
Hey, that's pretty awesome, man. That's pretty. And so he bit himself and was bleeding.
Yeah, and he claimed that Lewis bit him, and the referee was in on it, and he corroborated the story, and they disqualified Lewis. So he won two falls in a row.
So today you wouldn't get disqualified for biting or bleeding.
No. I mean, he didn't get disqualified for bleeding. Lewis got disqualified for biting his opponent.
Yeah.
When he didn't bite his opponent.
A
lot of people have speculated that Lewis was in on it. Luthez, in his book entitled Hooker, who knew Strangler Lewis and was sort of a protege of his, he backs the story up that it was legitimate, that they really did screw Lewis out of the title.
Wow.
Because that's the only way you were going to take it off of him if he didn't want you to. You weren't going to take the title off Lewis. I've never heard a story of anybody beating Ed Lewis in a match that he didn't want to get beat in.
No. I mean, he is wrestling royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like...
Yeah, for those of us who care...
You do not say anything bad about Luthez or Strangler Lewis.
No.
You can say bad things about pretty much anybody else in wrestling.
Right.
Except for those two guys.
And Harley Race... I think you don't ever hear anybody say anything bad about Harley Race. I think he's on that list of people that most people don't talk bad about.
Right. Because to my knowledge, Harley Race always did good business.
Yeah,
and could wear you out if he needed to.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, you know, I love being a know-it-all.
Yeah. Can I ask you this? I know you're not going to tell me. What made you? Were you seeking out that information, or you woke up and it came to you?
I'm going to tell you what my daddy used to tell me. A little bird told me.
A little bird.
No. I actually believe in giving credit where credit's due. Jim Cornette.
Really?
He didn't tell the story. He doesn't watch wrestling anymore. He's a wrestling historian now. He has kind of taken on that mantle. And on his podcast, The Jim Cornette Experience, he has people from around the country who are wrestling historians who've written books about the history of different territories.
So when are we going on his show?
Well, we're waiting on the invite.
All right.
Anyway, he had a few guys on the other day that wrote a book about Montreal, the history of wrestling in Montreal.
Yeah.
And I heard them talking about it, which led me to research it a little bit. Because that's what I do. I mean, when I hear something that interests me, because I wonder why they do that.
Yeah.
You know, and they started talking about it, and it led me to go do the research and find out the rest of the story. So there you go. And I like to pass that information along when I get it.
That's good stuff. And you know what, folks? That's free of charge to you. Absolutely free of charge, that information right there.
And now you can go tell your friends.
Yeah, you got a story
why.
To tell.
Now you got a story to tell about why. Next time you're watching wrestling with them, and the champ gets disqualified and the title don't change hands, you break that out and you'll impress. Well, probably nobody, and it certainly ain't gonna get you no girlfriend, but
hey, let me tell you, and if your kids are out there listening to this and you're getting in a fight with your sibling and they bite you, hey, that's a disqualification in Montreal in the 30s.
But here's the thing, if you're passionate about something, whether it's wrestling or whatever it is, don't stop learning about it.
That's right. That's exactly right. What I have found as we've been doing this show is it's increased my love for wrestling. But, and I think this has affected you and I the same way, we're very much interested in the wrestling we grew up with. But the 98% of wrestling we don't know anything about.
Yeah, I'm more interested in that stuff now.
I want to find out that kind of stuff.
Really?
I want to...
I used to have my fallback 25.
Right.
My 25 favorite matches, and I would watch them.
Right.
You know, not every day, but I mean, you know...
Every
other day. Once a year, I'm going to watch those 25 matches probably at some point. But now, for me, because we're doing the show, and because I do... Jaw joking aside, love coming on here and telling you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my goal and my passion now is to find out this is a big deal in wrestling. This is something that we just accept as part of wrestling, but why?
Right.
What happened? And because that's what I'm finding out, that all of these rules and everything have a reason.
Yeah.
That they were originally put in place because it originally was a work shoot.
Right.
Not a 100% work.
Gotcha.
There was some shooting going on, so the rules were put in place to protect people.
Right,
to protect champions specifically.
Very similar to, I mean, very similar to UFC. You go back to UFC 1.
Yeah, there's no rule.
It's completely different now. I mean, they would have a gentleman's handshake.
I think you couldn't, if I'm not mistaken.
You're not going to crotch somebody.
No, that was, no, sir, that was not one of the rules.
Really? Oh, no, no, sir. No, it wasn't a rule.
And I've seen people do it.
Okay, well, they would, but a lot of times they would.
The only thing you couldn't do was fish hook.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Which is the...
Which is putting your finger in somebody's mouth or in somebody's eye socket or in somebody's ear.
Okay. Why not, the crotching
pretty much putting your... You can't put your fingers in any orifices on their body and pull on it and try to hurt them. Yeah.
But I think a lot of times going into the match, there would be, between the opponents, a handshake agreement. We're not going to do A, B, and C.
Oh, there might have been between guys like Royce, Hoist Gracie, and
right.
But
Tank Murdoch.
Tank Murdoch wasn't shaking nobody's hand and promising not to do nothing. Yeah. I think you were wrong on that.
No. I'm saying between just not everybody.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah.
Like certain guys.
May have an agreement. Right. But some of those guys were pit fighters.
Yeah.
They were not. Yeah, they were there trying. They
I don't
were going
think Jimbo him. Slice.
Yeah, I don't think him and Tank Murdoch ever, or Tank,
whatever,
Abbott. Tank Abbott ever shook
Tank anybody. Murdoch, your dad.
Tank Murdoch's my dad, and he's from Every Which Way But Loose.
I totally lost my train of thought. That's okay, because you were talking about rules, and that made me think it's about something else. Let me say this. There are so many people today, our age and younger, who grew up on wrestling. And they just totally don't like wrestling today. They think it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hope this show does is, hey, you don't want to watch Raw. Hopefully, Mark and I can find you 3 hours of wrestling to watch that you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
That is, our thing is we love professional wrestling. And if you loved it just because you don't like the current product, whether it's TNA or Ring of Honor or WWE. If you don't like the current product, that's fine. I mean, our job is not to try to convince you to watch the current product.
Oh, I understand if you don't want
to. Right. Our job is to promote the great history of this.
Yes. I care more about the history now than I do the new stuff.
Yes.
And that's what I watch. I know Heath and I do, we have a document that we share with one another through Google. And I've been just dropping, not just matches, I've been dropping full cards onto that.
Right.
Of stuff from the 80s, man. I put the Final Conflict on there that was the grandfather of Starrcade.
Yes. I'm so excited to watch
that. And it's a great match.
Yeah.
But it was that, couple of match card.
Yeah.
In the Greensboro Coliseum. We're just dropping all kind of stuff. And there's so much good wrestling out there just on YouTube and Daily Motion.
Right. Yes.
So much good stuff out there. Full cards.
Right.
If you know what you're looking for.
Right.
And you know where to find them. Not just matches. Full cards, man. There's like some of these, the women's Japanese stuff. A lot of the Japanese cards are like 5-6 hours long.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's way, there. If you don't like what's going on now, tell me, here's what you do.
Yeah. Tell them.
Go to Twitter.
Yeah.
Go to doubledropkick.com. Go to our Facebook page.
Right.
Tell me what you like.
Yeah. And we'll find you something.
And I'll... Right. I say I.
No,
I'm
no,
sorry.
I mean,
when I say I mean the...
I mean the show.
I mean the royal eye. And I will... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I like to refer to us as I.
Yeah.
And I'll... You tell me I like high flying.
Yeah.
Or I like bloody brawls.
Yeah.
Or I like scientific mat-based wrestling. And I'll tell you what's going on in the past and maybe even some today that you can find.
Yeah. I just want to say this, okay?
If you like people hitting each other over the head with fluorescent light bulb tubes, I don't understand where your mind's at.
Right.
But I'll tell you where to find it.
Let me just say this, okay? And I'm not just putting him over because he's sitting across the table from me. In my opinion, okay, when you talk about wrestling experts. I don't know that he would say this himself.
Yeah.
Consider Mark such a great resource to me. He has introduced me to some of the greatest wrestling I had never seen. And through this show now, I've seen it. And how this guy is not working, how... Listen, if you want to give us 20 grand, we're going to start a wrestling company that'll make you proud and be like the wrestling you grew up with and not be 5 hours of television every week.
You're right about that. It'd be one, I could, for 20 grand, put on two good shows a month.
Yeah, for 20, for 1 month or how many months?
I mean, if you want to, well, see, you got to have the money to buy all the stuff.
Right, right.
So that's for, you got to pay all the licensing, you got to get all the buildings.
And if you're listening to this show,
then I
got to
bring talent in.
You, if you buy us a wrestling ring, we'll put you, you know, if you want to have.
I'll put you a show together.
No, if you want to buy a wrestling ring, if you want to put your restaurant name on the apron, hey, that's a sponsorship right there.
There you go, there you go.
If you, if when I'm doing my color commentary, if you want this finishing hold brought to you by Jimmy's Oil and Lube.
That's right.
Not going to go that far. This isn't the NFL.
That's
everything's
right.
Bought
everybody,
for.
Yeah, that's awful. I'm going to take you to the Skittles Slam of the Week. Skittles, taste the rainbow.
Not the wrestling we grew up with. We kind of got off. We didn't get off topic because we were talking about old school wrestling.
And blood. And all that.
Last thing. What else you got before I kind of bring this thing to a...
Well, if you want to see a, just a really good bloody match and you like really good bloody brawls, go back. Go to YouTube. Sergeant Slaughter versus Pat Patterson's alley fight from Madison Square Garden. It was kind of the culmination of their feud. One of the, at least in the WWF, WWE, WWF, whatever you want to call it, in the F, one of those first times they have one of those big brawls and anything could happen and everybody is come as you are. They show up in blue jeans and cowboy boots. I always like that. Nobody dresses. They all dress like metrosexuals now.
Yes.
So I wouldn't want to see them come to the ring in their real clothes because they'd just be tight pants and, you know, a pink shirt. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You just can't be a man in our country anymore. The day you see me wearing a pink shirt, it'll be because it's I'm supporting breast cancer awareness.
Yes, I was going to say doing it for charity.
I would do it for charity.
You're not going to wear a pink shirt that says I'm a show off.
I can promise you, I ain't wearing no pink
shirt. What if
shirt.
It was for charity? What if somebody bought you the appropriate size Dolph Ziggler shirt to raise awareness for charity?
What charity?
I don't know.
The crappy wrestlers that everybody thinks ought to be world champion fund.
What if you lost a bet?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, yeah.
Fans, send us at the DDK show, at Heath Mulligan. What is a bet Mark and I can make where the loser has to wear a Dolph Ziggler shirt?
That's a good one. If they make one in my size.
Hey, I'm going to click on the banner, and I'm going to see if they make one in your size. Because I'll pay money and the shipping and handling. To see you wear a Dolph Ziggler shirt.
It's going, you know what? Maybe that'll be our Clemson Carolina bet.
I'll shake on it right here, right now.
I got to think about it.
No, you don't.
Because we beat y'all 5 years in a row at some point. Hey, Clemson's got to get lucky and
let
win
it
one.
Be said right here, right now, that when the challenge is made.
All right. You called it me out.
We just
shook on it. I got to wear a pink shirt.
If Clemson beats Carolina, and I got to wear... No, not just a pink shirt.
A Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler shirt.
And you take my picture and put it up on the website.
And the same thing for me.
Yeah. Somebody's got to wear the... Back in the day when Ric Flair would come out and say, somebody's going to bleed. Somebody's going to wear a pink shirt at the end of this college football season. And y'all are going to get to see it.
I've never prayed for a tie so long. And if it's a tie...
We both get Hulkamania shirts.
Okay. That'll work. Oh, man. Good stuff. Hey, we hope you... Listen, we've enjoyed this episode. I have. This has been good to talk about the history of wrestling, the history of blood in wrestling. We want to know your thoughts. We're going to be linking to some of these matches Mark talked about, the Hanson-San Martino match, the Sergeant Slaughter-Pat Patterson match. going to put a link to the Lou Thesz book where he talks about Ed Strangler Lewis, and also other links to Strangler Lewis as well.
Which I'm reading Thesz's book, by the way.
Awesome.
Just I'm actually reading his wife's foreword right now, so it hadn't got into his life. But
right, right.
It's just her talking about him.
So you're on page 4 of like 400.
Well, I've read her introduction, and gotcha. I'm reading the other guys gotcha. Who helped him write it. I'm doing his introduction right now. I haven't actually got to Thesz.
Yeah.
Yet.
Cool. I'm excited to hear about that book. That may make its way onto the gimmick table.
Oh, I think it will. Yeah, because I want to educate myself about the history of wrestling, how we got to where we're at now. That's a good place to do it.
Right. Right. I love it, man. I just love wrestling, old or new. It's just a good. This is awesome.
Me too. I love it, man. I love to hear those old stories because that.
Yes.
I mean, that is the foundation. The three-match series that Strangler Lewis would do,
yeah,
that's a wrestling tradition,
yeah.
The three-match series.
Yeah.
I mean, all that stuff, man. It came about because of that era.
Yeah.
The WWF.
Yeah.
And then Buddy Rogers challenging Thesz for the title in a 2 out of 3 falls match and then them splitting the titles and the WWF going off on their own. I can't wait to read how that story went down from Lou's perspective.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You know. I would love to know if there's any Buddy Rogers books because I'm sure he would have some.
Well, he died.
Right.
Pretty like early in the 80s, right? But I'm sure somebody written a book about it.
Right. I just want to hear the when he drops the belt to Bruno.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think Bruno stole the line from Lewis. We're going to do this the easy way or the hard way.
Right.
And 17 seconds later, Bruno's the champion.
I watched Ivan Koloff beat Bruno the other day. It's real grainy.
It's real shocking.
Real shocking.
It came out of nowhere.
You can't really get, you don't, because all you can see is what's going on in the ring, so you can't see the crowd reaction. But from my understanding is it wasn't a pop. It was just like when Lesnar beat Undertaker, it was silent heat.
Yeah.
Where everybody just went, what?
Yeah.
You know.
And Bruno, he was on somebody's, might have been Colt Cabana's podcast, and he talked about how he regretted it because of it's like as soon as he heard the crowd reaction, he's like, oh, did we mess up in doing this?
Right.
And but that guy was burnt. Man, he'd been champ for 8 years.
Yeah, man. He needed a break, you know. He just needed a break.
So anyway, go to DoubleDropKick.com, find any banner. And what do they do, Mark?
Click on it.
Click on that banner and support the show. Keep our show free and follow us on Twitter.
You may know this. Yeah. You may not. When they go to Amazon.com, can't they do a backslash and put something in? I thought we set that up.
No.
Well, doggone it, we need to.
If they click on, if we have any.
Because I had an issue, and the reason I bring it up is I'll click on a banner before I buy something on Amazon.
Yeah, and if you click on a banner, it's connected to our thing, and unless you delete your browsing history and you keep that cookie, anything you buy once you've clicked on our Amazon banner, we'll get credit for.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I bought those things after clicking on that banner, didn't charge me anymore on Amazon.
No.
I didn't have to. It wasn't like they said, oh, well, we're going to give DoubleDropKick.com a little 25, 30 cents. Because it's not a lot.
We do Amazon a favor. A lot of people have never heard of Amazon.
Right.
Only through our show.
Only through the DoubleDropKickShow.com.
Right.
Or DoubleDropKick.com or the DoubleDropKick Show. Do they even know that Amazon exists?
Yes. So follow us on Twitter. Like our Facebook page. Don't just go on our Facebook page.
Like it.
There's the thumb there. Like it.
Talk to us.
Please. Sometimes I feel like me and you are in a cave talking to ourselves.
Well, we kind of are.
Yeah. And my mom has not brought us any Little Debbies today.
We got nothing.
Well, they've been on a cross-country trip for the last month.
Well.
They just got home and they're kind of selling us short. So, anyway, hey, as always.
Selfish.
As always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And we'll talk to you later.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And it's so good to be with. I'm so. No.
What was wrong with that?
I'm so glad to be with you here. I'm so
glad to be here today in the Lord's house on this wonderful Sunday morning. It is indeed a day that he has made.
That's going to find its way.
That'd be a good one, wouldn't it?
A few things you need to work on.
That's all background stuff that we need to work on. That's the stuff nobody knows about.
Okay.